This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. Most of the writing about George Washington is as exciting as a wet Monday morning. I doubt if there was ever a great man in history whose life has come down to us so much as a legend and so little as a human being. The distinguished American actress Miss Ethel Barrymore suggested that we present as her favorite story a play about President Washington which would show him more as a real person, less as a statue in a museum. The Messrs. Lawrence and Lee, who write and direct these favorite story programs, began a research into the life of George Washington, the man. Their play, entitled The Young Years, is the result. So we ask you to journey backward in time to the young years of the American Republic, to the days of its borning, when Colonel Washington was an obscure Virginia tobacco farmer with brownish hair and an uncommonly long nose. William Johnstone and Jimmy Lydon are co-starred as Washington and his young aide-de-camp in our radio production of Ethel Barrymore's favorite story, The Young Years. Here's Act One.
Good afternoon, Colonel. It's very good of you to give us some of your precious time.
On the contrary, Mr. Cresswell, I'm sure you are a much busier man than I am.
That may be, that may be. I've been looking forward to this meeting, Colonel. Been looking forward to it for a long time. This is my son, Tom. He's learning my business. That's the reason I brought him along.
It's a pleasure to know you, Tom.
I'm honored, sir.
Now, why don't we go out on the veranda? We can have tea served while we're talking.
Ah, capital, capital. You know, Colonel, I think we're going to get on together. Do a lot of business together.
At least we can be good neighbors.
We aren't quite neighbors yet, you know. You know, my property up the river is separated from yours by the old Morley place, the boat landing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what I should want with that old Morley place. It's worthless, but I've just got a hankering to have a boat landing.
And Mr. Cresswell, how does this involve me?
Well, I'll tell you my thought. If Morley knows I'm after his place, I figured he might set the two of us bidding against each other in order to get his price up higher. And since we're both sensible men, Colonel, I thought that, well, we might settle on a price and agree not to bid against each other.
Uh-huh.
That way I can get the property from Morley at a rock-bottom figure. A man's got to watch his money these days. What will the taxes as high as they are? Seems to me the government takes everything. Man can't call his life his own.
Oh, Patsy.
Yes, Daddy George?
Patsy, this is Mr. Cresswell and his son, Tom.
How do you do, man?
How do you do, Long Living?
Would you ask Biddy to serve us tea out here in the veranda, please?
I'll be glad to.
And perhaps young Tom would like to look around Mount Vernon. Why don't you show him about the place, Patsy, while his father and I are talking business?
Would you like to see some of the plantation, Mr. Cresswell?
Oh, indeed I would. Is it all right, Father?
Yes, of course, Tom. But come back and join us for tea. Now, Colonel, I can't see where you should have any objection to such a plan.
Did you arrive by carriage, Mr. Cresswell?
Oh, no, we rode in by horseback. Father loves to ride, so do I.
Then I'll have to show you our stables, if we have time. Daddy George is very proud of our breed of horses.
Well, I'd like to see them, Miss Washington.
Oh, that's not my name. I'm Patsy Custis.
Custis?
C-U-S-T-I-S. It's rather an odd name, isn't it? You see, Mother was married before.
Oh, then Colonel Washington's your stepfather.
Oh, but never the cruel kind like in the fairy tales. Daddy George has always been like a real father. But Mother doesn't want us to forget that we had a real father once, so we call him Daddy George. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Creswell. Oh, Biddy, will you serve tea on the veranda now? They're waiting. Forgive me for prattling so. Now I'll show you through the house. It isn't just terribly big. Not nearly so big as the house we used to have.
Isn't Colonel Washington rich?
Well, he's rich, but, well, not as rich as Mother. We call this the game room. This is where Daddy George plays billiards and cards, especially on rainy days.
Do you play cards at your house? My father says it's wicked.
Oh, we don't think so. You see that big fish mounted on the wall? Daddy George caught that 2 summers ago in Chesapeake Bay.
You know, you really must have a happy life here, Patsy.
Why, yes, I suppose we do. Don't you have a happy life, Tom?
Well, I guess I should be happy. I can have anything I want. My father has at least a dozen farms and plantations. He buys property and then he sells it. I'm going into the business with him next year. It'll be Creswell and Son.
Oh, won't you be proud?
No. No, I don't like it. I don't like my father's business.
What does your mother say?
Oh, she's been dead for 10 years. You know, I don't know what I want to do. A friend of mine works in a printing shop. I think I'd like that, but I'm not sure.
Tom, would you like to talk things over sometime?
Well, I haven't anyone to talk with except my father. And he's so stiff, it's like talking with a fence post.
You could talk things over with me.
Could I, Patsy? Could I come and see you sometimes?
Oh, any time. I'd love to see you again.
Will you teach me to play cards? It isn't really wicked, is it?
Oh, of course not. Oh, there's Biddy with the tea. We better go back on the veranda.
That's not all I have to say to you, sir. I consider your conduct in this matter
extremely unethical.
One moment, Mr. Creswell. Unbusinesslike and unethical, Colonel Washington. I will be roasted in the fires below before I'll have any more dealings with you.
Unless you can hold your tongue and your temper, sir, I shall have to ask you to leave.
I'll hold neither, but I'll be thankful to leave your house. And I tell you, Washington, there'll be a time when you'll be sorry for this. Come, Thomas, we're leaving.
Yes, Father.
But what about tea?
We'll drink our own tea, thank you.
Good day to you, sir.
What's the matter, Father? What happened?
I came to him fair and above board to make a deal about buying that boat landing from old Morley. And he'd already bought it for himself.
Well, what do you care about an old boat landing?
Care? The tobacco barges start coming down the river this spring, and whoever has that boat landing can make himself a tidy little fortune.
It seems to me like Colonel Washington just outsmarted you,
sir. I don't need any lessons from you on how to run my business. Washington. Thomas, you're never to go near that house, understand? Have nothing to do with him.
But, Father,
George Washington is a thief and a scoundrel. I'll settle things with Colonel Washington.
Thanks for the ride, Hope. How come you're driving into town tonight?
There's a meeting of the Sons of Freedom. Why don't you come with me?
Oh, my father doesn't approve of such things. He's very loyal to the king.
I'm loyal. Really, I am, Tom. But if you asked whether I was an Englishman or an American, I'd have to say I was an American. And when the king's ministers treat us like dirt, I think we ought to do something about it.
Oh, there's somebody in a hurry.
Hey! Why, you almost pushed us off the road.
Well, it's the next turn up ahead.
I know the way. Get up, boy.
You know, I don't understand all this talk about trouble with the king.
It all depends on how you look at it, Tom. You're well off, but a little farmer over in New Jersey with a 5-acre garden patch isn't so lucky. He can't even elect a man to the parliament that votes the taxes on him.
It doesn't seem fair.
Of course it's not fair. Whoa, boy. Whoa. Well, here's Mount Vernon. You want a lantern?
No, I can find my way up the path in the moonlight. Don't let my father know I came here. He doesn't like the Washingtons.
I won't tell anybody.
Hope?
Yeah?
Do you think there might be fighting in the colonies?
Who knows?
Well, my father says that the continent...
Well, you know, well, you want to know what's wrong with you? You've been wearing your father's suspenders too long. It's time you learn to keep your pants up by yourself. Get up, boy. Get up.
Good night, Hope.
Who's that?
Huh?
Why, it's Tom Cresswell, isn't it? Yes, of course.
Oh, Colonel Washington.
Yeah, surprised to see a Cresswell at Mount Vernon. Did your father send you over to buy another boat landing?
Well, my father doesn't know I'm here. I came to see Patsy, if you don't mind, sir.
You're welcome any time, Tom. I'll walk up to the house with you. I dare say Patsy's watching for you out the window. Did she know you were coming?
Well, we'd made plans in a way.
Oh, how long has this been going on?
Oh, several months, sir. Ever since that afternoon my father was so rude to you. I'm very fond of Patsy.
So am I. Young love. I'd almost forgotten what it's like. I feel like Methuselah, Tom, with 1,000 years of thoughts in my head. I can't think indoors, you know. I have to get outside to think. But there's a moon in the ceiling.
Is something worrying you, sir?
Same thing that's worrying everyone else, I suppose. Isn't your father concerned about the trouble up in Boston?
Oh, he says the Boston people should look after themselves.
Oh? And if your father's foot were run over by a coach and four, would he expect the foot to look after its own hurt, eh?
Well, I don't know, sir.
Is that you, Daddy George? There's a man waiting here to see you, and he says it's terribly important.
I'll be right in. Who is it, Patsy?
Good evening, Washington.
Cresswell.
Father.
What are you doing here, Thomas?
Well, you see, sir,
You'll have time to explain later. Connell, have you heard?
No.
It's happened. I just got news by courier from Philadelphia. It'll be all over the countryside by sunrise.
Bloodshed?
A pitched battle at Lexington between the British regulars and the Massachusetts rabble.
Who fired first?
The regulars, they say, but with a good cause.
Oh, now we're in for the full of it.
Washington, I'll tell you why I've come here. We've had our differences, but I respect you, Colonel. And this is a crisis. The men of influence in these colonies must stay together. We must stop this thing. It's revolution.
Yes. Revolution.
Must be stamped out. Treasonous. A crime against the throne. Outrageous flaunting of the forces of justice.
Justice, Mr. Cresswell? We've had precious little justice from George III.
We must use all of our influence, Colonel, to stop this spread of the revolution. It will be the ruin of us all.
No, Mr. Cresswell, no. Our ruin lies in being a cockboat to the British man of war. Our destiny lies in freedom.
You're out of your mind, Washington.
Am I? Look over your shoulder, sir.
Huh?
What's in back of you? 3,000 miles of the richest country on earth. And it's never going to grow from being whipped and bled by a stupid German king.
You would support the revolution?
Yes.
You'll be hanged?
Then I'll be hanged. But I'll be in good company, sir. Better company than you'll be in. I've dreaded this and feared it. But now it's happened, I can see it was inevitable.
Nothing was ever gained by fighting.
Nothing was ever gained by letting yourself be kicked either. There's a certain basic dignity that's worth fighting for. Patsy.
Yes, Father?
Get my carpet bag down from the garret. I'm going to Williamsburg.
Tonight?
Have to raise the House of Burgesses. Get them to send some relief to Boston. And Patsy, tell Stephen to saddle the mare.
Yes, Father.
Colonel, I am sorry for you.
Mr. Cresswell, I'm sorry for you.
Come, Thomas.
Good night, Father.
Good night?
I'm not going home with you.
You're what?
Colonel Washington, if I can be of any help or service, I pray you, sir, let me go with you.
You're a good lad, Tom. I'll be proud to have you with me. We'll need every man we can get, for God only knows what lies ahead of us.
Bring you the second act of Ethel Barrymore's favorite story, The Young Years. William Johnstone is Washington, and Jimmy Lydon is Tom, and our old friend Bill Conrad is the Tory Cresswell. Now, try to forget the history books and think of these people as they really lived, of these events as they really happened. After Lexington and Concord, there was no turning back. The 13 American colonies, total population less than 3 million, had pitted themselves against the greatest military and naval power in the 18th century world. 13 puny, disorganized colonies against the might of the whole British Empire. The Continental Congress made Colonel Washington a general, well, not because anybody wanted him particularly, but as a political trade to get Virginia to support the revolution. The beginning of his campaign was brilliant. He frightened Lord Howe out of Boston, made the famous surprise attack on Trenton by crossing the Delaware Christmas night. But then things began to go badly. New York fell to the British, so did Philadelphia. And after a stinging defeat at Brandywine, General Washington pulled the pieces of his little army across the border into Pennsylvania.
Tom?
Yes, General?
What do you think of this place?
Well, sir, it seems to be a good spot for an encampment. The rear is protected by the hills. The river water's good.
Until the river freezes.
We can always thaw the ice.
If we have firewood. All we can do is pray for a milder winter. And pray that our good friends in the Continental Congress will trouble themselves to give us a little help.
The men have been grumbling, sir. I don't suppose you hear these things, but they've been complaining about not being paid.
22 cents a day. That's what we promised these poor beggars for risking their lives to make a republic. And Congress won't even pay that, except in paper money that isn't worth the ink it's written with.
Well, a good many of the soldiers are deserting, General, going back to their homes.
It's a miracle to me they don't all desert. Why don't you go home, Tom? Call the whole blame thing a bad job and go home.
Well, I believe in the cause, sir, and I'm loyal to you. Besides, I don't have a home to go to.
Your father still holds a grudge?
I'm afraid it's more than that. He's disowned me. He says he doesn't have a son.
No. You disowned him, Tom, and he deserved it.
General Washington, I don't want to go home to my father. If we're going to be encamped here at Valley Forge all winter, could you give me a few days' leave to visit Patsy?
Tom, there isn't a man, Jack, in this army that doesn't want to see his sweetheart or his mother or his wife. But if I gave him leave, how many do you think would bother to come back? No, I can't let them go. And I can't show favoritism to you, Tom.
Well, is it so terribly important that we stay together through this winter? There won't be any fighting till spring.
We must have a rallying point, son. Even if only a handful of us stay together, we'll have the beginnings of an army in the spring. Otherwise, there'll be no ranks for the summer soldiers to come back to.
I understand, sir.
It's like a carriage going through the mire, Tom. As long as we can keep the wheels turning, it's all right. But once we stop, we're stuck for good.
General, there's something else I feel you should know. I suppose it's not right for a son to tell tales about his father, but, well, this has to do with all of us and the Republic.
I know your father's pulling against us.
Well, that's not all, sir. He's left Philadelphia and his British friends. He's pretending to be sympathetic to our cause, but, well, he's using all his influence and his money, sir, to get members of the Congress to turn against you.
Tom.
I know my father's to blame in part, at least, for the way they've ignored all your requests for money and supplies.
Are you sure this is true?
I'm positive, sir.
I can understand the man hating me, but when his hate is wrecking an army and a nation, it must be stopped. Tom, I'm going to see your father. Mr. Cresswell.
Yes, what is it?
Well, Colonel Washington. No, I beg your pardon. It's General Washington now, isn't it? General of the Ragamuffins.
Mr. Cresswell, it is because my men are in tatters, without shoes in the cold, their very feet bleeding, that I came to you. We need help.
I do not happen to be a member of the Continental Congress. I will not be so modest, however, as to indicate that I do not have strong influence on quite a few of the members of that body. Some of them are men with sets. They see, as I do, the complete hopelessness of your so-called revolution, and they are working, as I am, to restore sanity to these colonies.
They are not colonies, Mr. Cresswell. We have declared our independence quite openly. Or hadn't you heard?
They will be colonies soon again, Washington. Why don't you call this whole thing off?
Where does the patriot become a traitor and the traitor become a patriot? I wish I knew.
I don't take sides, either side. You know how I stand. I came to you in the early days of this. I told you what I thought.
Men can fight and die and freeze to death because one man like you sits on a fence. Help us and we can win. Fight us in this way and we have nothing to fight with.
Why fight? You and your army of farmers and tinkers have already lost us New York and Philadelphia. Do you want all of us to lose our homes and our necks? No, Mr. General, I intend to use my money and my influence to put a stop to this crazy stalemate, to stop all of your madmen.
Thank you, Mr. Cresswell. I'm sure someday you will be applauded for your courage and vision. Good day to you.
Oh, Washington. One thing. How is Tom?
Why would you want to know that, sir? He's one of those revolutionary madmen. What's the matter with you, Tom? What's happened to you?
It was the bad snowstorm, General Washington. Last week while you were away, I loaned my boots to a boy who was walking sentry barefoot, and he ran off.
Don't worry, don't talk, son. Just rest.
Did you see my father?
Yes.
And he's going to help us now?
I wish I could say yes to that too, son.
But he must help us, sir. Does he know? Does he realize what we're going through here at Valley Forge?
Tom, we're going to make him realize.
General, I insist on seeing my son.
Mr. Cresswell, you will insist on nothing. I am in command here.
This was a pretext. My son is not ill, and you've dragged me to this godforsaken Pennsylvania town in dead of winter on a pretext.
If it's any satisfaction to you, sir, your son may be dying.
What? Dying?
We don't know. There aren't enough doctors in this Continental Army to care for a tenth of the men who are sick, thanks to the cheapness of you and your friends in the Congress. We haven't had money enough or food enough or clothing enough or medicine enough or anything enough.
Don't blame me, sir. This is your fault. You took Tom away from his home and his father.
Children are not chattel, Mr. Cresswell. They reach an age. They make their own decisions. The young years are over for your son. He's a man now. And he's suffered more than a man ought to suffer.
Let me see him, sir.
In here.
Tom? Tom, boy, are you all right? I've come to get you, boy. Come to take you home.
Take me home?
No more of this ragged cold, boy. No more. I'm sorry what they've done to you, but I'm taking you out of this.
No. I won't go.
What?
They need us. Every man. Rallying point.
A rallying point? For what? Tom. Sir, get a doctor.
What doctors there are have duties with men who are in worse pain than your son, sir.
General Washington, sir, I've been trying to do what I believed was right as I saw it. I admit it. I tried to starve you out of here. I've used pressure and influence. I've done everything possible to make your army fall apart so we could stop this useless war and get back to normal. Back to a normal living again.
How could you have the egotism, Mr. Cresswell, to set yourself up as almighty judge, to determine whether this American Revolution should succeed or be starved to death?
I'm no different from you in that respect, sir. You've made yourself the almighty champion of this fruitless cause.
No, the cause of freedom is a great deal bigger than we are, Mr. Cresswell. And even though you kill your son by negligence, and 10,000 other men's sons, because it would be pleasant to get back to normal, even so, this dream of freedom is going to be realized.
Son, are you all right?
Please, go away. I don't want to see you.
Tom, it's not too late, Mr. Cresswell. Your boy's going to be all right. The doctors say he's past the crisis. If he were in great danger, sir, believe me, I'd have every medical man on my staff in attendance, few as they may be.
If Tom believes so hard...
He does. And a few thousand other men, ragged and discouraged, are sticking it out here in Valley Forge because they believe just as hard as Tom does. You can't sell short a faith like that. You may set us back, Mr. Cresswell, but you can't make us give up this American independence.
What do you want me to do, sir?
Get us some help here. Use that precious influence of yours to persuade the Congress to vote enough taxes to support an army.
I'll do what I can, General.
Thank you, sir.
Patsy. Patsy.
You'll see Patsy again. With good luck and good help, it may all be over soon. Tom.
Yes, General.
Tom, your father. Your father's going to help us.
I'm going to help raise money, Tom.
That's good.
You're going to be well again, Tom. And we'll have some peace for a change. They say the young years are the hardest. The borning, that's the difficult thing. But when the borning is over, then comes the living. And I think the living is going to be good in this new country of ours.
I believe it was Samuel Adams who said during the early days of the Revolution, "This freedom will seem an easy thing someday when no one dies to attain it." It is interesting to see how torn and divided the colonies were during those trying days of the 1770s and 80s. For the United States arose from fires of dissension and conflict. Fires which perhaps tempered the new nation for its future strength and greatness. We hope that Ethel Barrymore's favorite story, The Young Years, has given you a vivid picture of the beginnings of the United States and a clearer view of the man who was its first president. Next week, we invite you to hear an adventure in a world of rare loveliness and quiet sunlight, one of the most touching in all literature, W.H. Hudson's Green Mansions. Miss Dinah Shaw has named it her favorite, and we think you will hear a story glowing with a beauty that makes it almost poetry. Next week at Favorite Story Time, when we bring you Green Mansions, we hope you'll be listening.